Thanks to HomeServe for sponsoring this episode. Owning home is amazing, until it's not. One minute you're sipping coffee, the next you're ankle deep in water from a burst pipe. Alyssa, is this triggering you?
Just saying, I had to get the generator cranking last night.
Oh no, repairs don't care about timing and they definitely don't care about your budget.
Regular homeowners insurance usually doesn't cover a lot of the day-to-day wear and tear. Plumbing failures, HVAC breakdowns, those are the worst. Electrical issues, you're often on your own for those. That's where HomeServe comes in. It's like a subscription for your home. For as little as $4.99 a month, they've got your back. Repairs hit fast and hard. You could be searching for a contractor in a panic, or you could already be on the phone with HomeServe's 24/7 hotline scheduling your repair. Super simple. Choose a plan for your needs and budget. And when something on your plan goes wrong, just call their 24/7 hotline to start the repair process. They've helped homeowners like you for over 20 years with a trusted national network of 2,600 local contractors. With 4.5 million customers, a 4.8 out of 5 post-repair rating, and an A-plus triple B rating, they are the real deal.
You know, I hate looking for repair people.
It's horrible.
It's terrible. And also, like, whenever I start—
They almost never call you back.
They almost never call you back. And also, the first one, there's always, like, six that are called A-A-A-B-B-C repair. And because they want to be the first ones in the—
Smart!
Smart, but also, like, impossible to tell if they're actually good. And they have, like, six reviews, and they're all suspicious. And it's like, you know, you just want to find somebody who's going to do the job well— And who's going to come and who's going to fix it? Because when your heater breaks or your AC breaks or all of a sudden your dryer isn't working or your dishwasher's messed up.
Toilet's gurgling funny.
Yeah, it just like ruins the experience of being in your house because you're constantly thinking about it. Alyssa, do you remember, were we friends when I lived in that place in Manhattan when I had a drip from the AC?
Yes.
And it drove me to insanity because it took weeks and weeks to find somebody who could come.
Yeah.
I still,
it's crazy.
When I hear dripping water now, I still get like this response in my body, like everything tightens up.
So same with me. Anytime I hear water dripping, it is like a complete PTSD trigger response. I'm like, this has to be solved right now. And mostly when you call people, you know, they're like, yeah, girl, I hear you, but it's going to be 3 days.
No, you don't hear me. This is terrible. Help protect your home systems and your wallet with HomeServe against covered repairs. Plans start at just $4.99 a month. Go to HomeServe.com to find the plan that's right for you. That's HomeServe.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alex Wagner.
Alex, do you remember who your college commencement speaker was?
I am ashamed to say, Erin Ryan, that I was so stoned, but I don't think I remember.
Wait. You don't remember?
I remember that Vartan Gregorian, who was the president of Brown when I came in, came back because he left the school. And he came back to, like, wish us well. But the rest of it is a blur. And it was really hot. And I remember being hungover. And yeah, I can't tell you.
Oh my God. That's so funny. Mine was Maria from Sesame Street.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but I don't remember anything about what she said. Today we cover the rapidly evolving hantavirus outbreak situation, Trump's latest pronatalist initiative, moms.gov, and Republicans' increasingly shameless plays to turn their careers in public service into careers as reality TV stars. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that feels sorry for Kristi Noem's new neighbors. Alex, Ghoulishly MAGA-faced former DHS Secretary Kristi Noem has finally vacated the Coast Guard Admiral's house that she'd been squatting in since shortly after her Senate confirmation to Trump's cabinet. Now, is she going back to South Dakota in the waiting arms of and pillowy breasts of her husband, Brian? Or is she and her alleged boyfriend, who's also married to somebody else, Corey Lewandowski, are they going to move into another love nest in an unsuspecting neighborhood somewhere else? Where will her goofy cowgirl cosplay take her next? Alex, do you have any guesses?
I want Brian to live happily ever after. I feel like Brian is the one that needs to win in all of this if anything is right and just in the universe. I would imagine that the bond forged between Corey Lewandowski and Kristi Noem is a very strong one, Aaron, and that somewhere, somehow, they'll be darkening a doorway together. I mean, you know, what the kind of unsavory the unsavoriness of those two people is so unique that I feel like they're linked forevermore. Oh, having yeah. said that, it's Trump land where nothing means anything. So who knows?
I think, you know, if I had to predict where I thought, I agree that I think they're probably going to stay together like I don't know, skunk in a dog's fur. They're going to stay together. And I think that I can picture them moving somewhere where Kristi can wear a cowboy hat and feel cool.
Yeah. Like, I hope there are horses wherever they go.
Yeah. Like Montana. I'm picturing Montana, like Missoula.
We hope it's a low population state wherever it is.
Yeah. I'm not wishing that on Montana.
I'm not wishing anything on any state, but no. They are going to probably stay in the United States because they've so ruined both their own reputation and ours abroad that I can't imagine anyone else accepting them. I mean, maybe they'll – never mind. I was going to make a Hantavirus joke here, but I'll leave that for later.
Well, I was going to say we're going to go to – I mean, I guess the connecting thread here is that she took a Coast Guard admiral's house – and this is more drama on the high seas. Currently, a hantavirus outbreak, specifically the Andes virus, is underway. And the World Health Organization has reported 11 cases, including 3 deaths as of Tuesday. Here's a good summary of how it started via the New York Times. Quote, the MV Hondius, which isn't it weird that it sounds kind of like haunty, like hantavirus? It's MV Hondius.
Yeah,
it's the MV Hondius departed for an Atlantic adventure cruise from Argentina last month. Within days, a 70-year-old Dutchman developed symptoms. He died on board the ship on April 11th, and his 69-year-old wife became ill and died on April 26th in Johannesburg, South Africa, while attempting to fly home to the Netherlands. On May 2nd, a German woman also died aboard the ship after developing flu-like symptoms. The WHO said her body later tested positive for the virus. Okay, so that's how it started. Here's how it's going. A majority of the roughly 150 passengers and crew members returned to their home countries on Monday. The 18 Americans were flown into Nebraska on a U.S. government medical flight. 16 of those passengers, including one who tested mildly positive for hantavirus, are staying in the biocontainment lab at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. 2 Americans continued on to the biocontainment facility at Emory University in Atlanta. On Tuesday, a French female passenger whose symptoms were first dismissed as anxiety was reported to be in critical condition and is breathing with an artificial lung, and that is in France that is happening. Here's what the president had to say about hantavirus on Monday. Let's play the clip.
I don't know how the hell he kept his job, but he was there telling us about this. Now, the one thing with this one is that it's much harder to catch. And we've had it for a long time. It's been around for a long time. People are very familiar with it. So, you know, I hope it's fine. All I can do is everything that a president can do, which is actually somewhat limited. But it seems like it is not easy to spread. In fact, it's in certain ways very hard to spread. It's been we've lived with it for years, many years, and we think we're in very good shape. We're very careful, and Nebraska has done a fantastic job. They have a place there that those doctors are unbelievable. The job they've done. Yeah, please.
Okay, so he wasn't just flying solo. His epidemiological expertise wasn't just standing on its own. He also had his pals, RFK Jr. and Dr. Oz. I'm sorry. For backup, this sounds like a dream I had.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Like it's a we're living in it. It's our living nightmare.
This sounds like, it's like, yeah, I had a dream. Like Oprah was there and Shania Twain.
And Katy Perry. And Katy Perry. And your ex-boyfriend.
And they were singing a song about a rat germ, and it was really strange, and everyone, and Katie Britt was there. Okay, but here's what actually was said when RFK Jr. and Dr. Oz jumped in.
What do you say to infectious diseases experts who say they're worried the country may not be prepared to deal with something like hantavirus because of all the HHS, you know, funding and staffing cuts?
Well, I think we take care of that. Do you want to answer that?
It's just not true. Jay Bhattacharya has taken this task on. Secretary Kennedy is involved with them. You can speak to perhaps even better than frankly best in the room. But the country is prepared, and the CDC is focused on it. And the agency is well aware of the opportunities to actually treat this problem, not just try to prevent it in the future, but treat it if it happens now. Secretary?
Yeah, I mean, we've had CDC teams on it from day one.
Okay.
Oh, my God. There's so much to say.
There's so much to say. I want to read some reporting that I read today from an independent journalist named Jacqueline Sweet. Actually, there were 30 passengers from the ship that were left. They left early on April 24th on St. Helena Island in the South Atlantic, including reported six Americans from several states, and none of the passengers had reported or tested positive. But they're not being quarantined. And at least two have embarked on multi-country globe-spanning travels since disembarking, presumably without testing and monitoring. One of those two has not yet been reported. The one that hasn't been reported is a dual New Zealand-American citizen who's a 75-year-old woman who lives in Manhattan. But because she doesn't have an American passport, she's not, like, she may not be known to American authorities. So anyway, yeah, that's happening too. And a bunch of them are being released from a hospital in the UK. But yeah, that's all happening. Alex, are you scared?
Should we be scared? Yeah, I mean, okay, what could go wrong, Aaron, when we have public health officials telling us to not be concerned at all about catching this? And then we actually get the science. There's a 2018 outbreak that happens in Argentina where people are contracting hantavirus through very limited contact with positive testing patients. So a guy goes to a birthday party with 100 people and contracts hantavirus. He was not hugging or kissing the person that had it originally, and he contracted it. There are people that had passing interaction with one of the women who later contracted hantavirus and later died. They're also getting hantavirus. The idea that we have nothing to worry about here, I think, is a real question in terms of transmission. And as the days pass, and as you hear more of this garbage from Trump and his, you know, public health officials, I think the more worried people are that are the people in charge of this are really downplaying the risk. Now, the fact is, this is what happens when you have an administration that's populated by vaccine skeptics, ivermectin boosters. There's no head of the CDC. CBS reported last year that they literally fired the CDC experts who were focused on cruise ship transmission, like literally the people that you would call upon mm-hmm. to deal with precisely this sort of outbreak were fired. The ranks of the CDC have been hollowed out. They fired hundreds, if not thousands, of CDC scientists in their giant government purge of 2025. I mean, we are woefully underprepared, and I would say actively putting on blinders in terms of the risk faced by the global public, if not the American public. It deeply concerns me that we are downplaying the potential transmission risks, that we have no apparent infrastructure to deal with it. I mean, Trump, in that clip that you played, talked about how great Nebraska is doing it. The reason there's a quarantine center in Nebraska is because President Obama built one mm-hmm. during the Ebola outbreak because he took it really fucking seriously. So, yeah, I'm worried. I mean, do I think I'm going to have hantavirus in the next 2 weeks? No, but this just it's giving me COVID vibes, like early COVID vibes, where it mm-hmm. was kind of like we dismissed it as something that was happening overseas and downplayed, you know, how much we should be prepared for something like this.
Yeah. I mean, I remember early days of COVID, the prevailing wisdom was that the molecule was too heavy. It was too heavy to transfer far. That's why you have to stand 6 feet away from each other. And when we learned that actually it doesn't really matter if you're standing 6 feet away from each other, we just kept the 6 feet away guideline. Yeah. And there's still like little dots that are like, when you go into like restaurants and stuff, that's like, please wait 6 feet away from each other. And it's like, that doesn't do shit. I think that you and I probably read the same piece in The Atlantic from an infectious disease expert.
Yes.
Who was talking about how, you know, he doesn't seem worried about like a global pandemic, but he is worried that more people are going to get this because people are not accurately representing how this germ spreads. Like, how can we be adequately cautious without freaking out, though?
I don't know that – I mean, I think – well, first of all, I think we're grappling not just with the sort of practical reality of this administration, its lack of preparedness, and, you know, the fact that it's populated by idiots and stooges. But we're also dealing with a social, cultural resistance to actually combating, you know, pandemics and taking the necessary health precautions. I think we really underestimate how much COVID is a, like, ADBC thing in American politics and society. Like, there's – and I would point everybody to Derek Thompson's, like, writing on this. But, you know, it has changed the way we think not just about health and public health – but the common good. And so we're even less inclined, I think, to take the steps that we would need to, that we would normally in pre-COVID days, to prevent the spread of something like this. I mean, that part worries me just as much as anything else. I don't think it's about, ringing the alarm bells and freaking people out. But the response right now, I think, is underselling the risk. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be – we have to tack at least further towards the caution side of things just because the transmission of this is significant and we're not doing any contact tracing. The people that got off that ship early are – some of them are quote-unquote extreme travelers mm-hmm. who like make a sport of going all the way around the world and going to conferences and weird places and getting on planes and trains and automobiles. I mean, those are the kind of vectors – that you need to make sure a virus spreads globally. It's just, it's all very concerning.
I mean, when viruses doodle in their notebooks in middle school, they doodle like exactly this cruise, you know, yeah. like, and the type of people on the cruise. This is like a dream for a virus to spread. This woman who I was just talking about the reporting on her, apparently, yeah, she went to a conference for extreme travelers in Vietnam. And she exactly. was and she was somebody known as a country collector. This exact cruise is something that stops in a lot of remote places. So people, it's like adventure travel. So there's like birders that are like, I really want to see some birds you can't see anywhere else. And then there are people that are like, I just really want to get like more than 100 stamps in my passport. And this woman was one of the like country collector types, and apparently this is just like funny color. She she really hated the birders. There's like a rivalry between the like country collector people and the birder people, and she wrote on a Facebook post, many more days surrounded by obsessive birders may have resulted in a serious mental health crisis and possibly physical violence.
Was it really hantavirus that killed that Dutch ornithologist, or was it?
Or was it
an extreme traveler?
Extreme traveler who was just sick of the birding. It's just it really. There's a subtext in a lot of coverage of this too. That's like kind of pointing fingers, but not pointing fingers, but actually pointing fingers at the selfishness of the people that are like traveling home. And but like what in what practical reality can somebody self isolate for 42 days? And not have that like impact their livelihood and cause like extreme interruption in their lives.
Well, I mean, no, it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I mean, this is the whole thing of like, what kind of society are we? Are mm-hmm. we a self, are we a society that champions a self over the greater good? Probably, yeah. So yeah, it seems like a pain in the ass that you might have to sit at home for 40 fucking days, a long ass time, just in case you're a vector for a deadly virus that has a mortality rate of 40%. I don't know. I mean, I think the inclination to self-isolate is probably pretty diminished by the fact that the government, our government, is out there saying, don't worry about this. It's not, it's really hard to catch. Like, who's going to willingly sit at home for 42 days and watch Netflix by themselves when they are being told by the president of the United States, no big deal here, you'd have to basically be rolling around in rat feces in order to communicate this or to contract it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's highly unlikely that people take the necessary steps. But, it, you know, I think COVID taught us the same thing, which is once you start asking people to do uncomfortable things for the benefit of society, people in this day and age get really itchy about that. They don't like doing that. The notion of self-sacrifice is not really an organizing principle of the 21st century. We are incredibly self-oriented and selfish. And you know, it has its benefits, I guess, in terms of innovation and tenacity, but it sure doesn't help you in the middle of a pandemic. And I think, you know, we haven't learned much in the aftermath of COVID. If anything, I think we've gotten even more selfish and less inclined to do what is better for unknown faceless people who might one day get sick and die.
Yeah, I think we've also gotten really distrustful. I mean, we were already distrustful before COVID. kind of made public health a politicized issue. But I think now we're sort of damaged beyond repair when it comes to the way that people trust health messaging. I think that there's like, there are the people that really hated the health messaging under COVID that hate Anthony Fauci and think that it was all like a scam or whatever. And those people never trusted health messengers. And now the people in charge are the people that were aligned with them. And so the people that were inclined to trust health messaging are not trusting the messengers, because the messengers are a member of a party that ran against trusting the messengers. So I've seen a lot of conspiracy theories kind of abounding. Have you examined any of them, or have you gone down any rabbit holes when it comes to conspiracies?
Well, I mean, I think in moments like this, I always go to my trusted source of all paranoid health conspiracy theories, which is like, what is the ivermectin crew talking about? And that's absolutely something people are latching onto in the season of hantavirus. You know, Aaron, there were like 2 minutes earlier this year when Marjorie Taylor Greene was making a lot of sense. She was saying things about the party. She was saying things about Donald Trump that seemed rooted in reality. But like, you know, 4 minutes have passed and now she's back to the same old crazy ass MTG shit, including reposting and retweeting theories that ivermectin can prevent hantavirus from taking control of your body. She also said that vitamin D and zinc will help fight the infection. She says that because she did not get the COVID-19 vaccine, her immune system is better positioned to fight off or develop natural immunity against hantavirus. And
oh my God. And wait, then she said that she can, that the COVID, that not getting the COVID shot makes her, that's like, that's like six different grades of wrong science.
Right. They have somehow managed to collapse vaccine denialism, ivermectin treatment, and the hantavirus into one big snowball of conspiracy, which is an idea that the COVID vaccine is causing hantavirus. I don't know. I couldn't like allow myself to get that deep into the darkness. But this is the new, this is the way you bundle together vaccine skepticism and hantavirus denialism, I guess. I mean, I would also say that Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying that Moderna purposely manipulated the virus in order to allow them to cash in on making a hantavirus vaccine.
Okay.
So that's another piece of this. There's a vaccine skepticism, big pharma conspiracy, and hantavirus denial, truthers. That's the world in which we now live. To the degree, and this is gaining so much traction, that the WHO has had to come out and say that there is no evidence to suggest that ivermectin is an effective treatment for hantavirus.
Yeah. I mean, it feels weird to even have to say it now. It's like a livestock dewormer. It is for worms. It's not for – but this also kind of has made me think bigger, because, I mean, what is there to do? Like, all there is to do is read about it and be like, well, hope nothing bad happens. I guess I'm going to like –
yeah.
I'm not going to go into like enclosed spaces if I can avoid it anyway. You know, like, whatever. I guess, do I have masks? Do I have stuff that I might need in case there's some sort of a lockdown or restricted movement? Do I have like basic – like, make sure everyone's washing their hands. I mean, what is there to do, you know, except kind of stew about it and ruminate? And I've been ruminating about the way that conspiracy theories and, like, being drawn to conspiracy culture is sort of experiencing a shift right now, because I think it used to be the kind of the ivermectin class sort of – it was their territory. But now I think we're seeing a lot more of it on the left, where people – we're not in charge – we're very disempowered. Disempowered groups tend to glom onto conspiracy theories because it's just the way that historically works. And I'm seeing this as like, I saw a theory that was like, there is no boat because only one person has been posting from the boat. And if anybody, and I think that now it's clear that people
it's like
were
lost.
Not, yeah, right. It is. There is no boat. I saw that. This is a distraction from something else being something going on in Iran, something going on in Israel. Like, I've seen theories around that, and it's been on my algorithm. Like, I'm not, I keep my right wing nonsense to my like podcast list and listen to, but I try not to like consume right wing nonsense when I'm just like having a cozy little scroll at the end of my day, you know? But it's made its way over to my side of the algorithm. And it's like these theories that this is something to do with hiding a news story or getting some other news story out. One person had a theory that it had something to do with hiding a story that about Disney cruise employees. Like, and it's so It is a story of people getting sick, and it's a virus that's rare and deadly, and we don't know really what to do about it yet. And it's not any more complicated than that.
Well, I would say for people who are sort of listening to this and asking themselves, like, well, what are we supposed to do other than get worried? I mean, I think the reality is we are all citizens that have power within our democracy, even though it may not feel like it. And one of the things that, like, I just can only think about the way the Obama administration handled it when they enlisted 10,000 civilian medical personnel to deal with the Ebola outbreak. They sent military units to West Africa to help them combat it and contain it. I mean, they dedicated real resources. And as you recall, Ebola was not a pandemic that we dealt with here in the United States for, you know, probably many reasons, but not least among them is because the American government mounted a very, very serious response. A prophylactic response, perhaps, but like they took it really fucking seriously. And I think one of the things we should demand of our elected representatives is like, you know, first of all, Democrats should at least be saying, wait a second. You're out there saying this shit. What evidence do you have? The only scientific paper ever published on transmission says something very different than what you're communicating to the public. Like, what kind of resources are you prepared to deploy if this becomes an issue? I mean, at the very least, there should be some conversation happening about it because I don't know. I don't leave it to RFK Jr. and Mehmet Oz and Donald fucking Trump to act with the country's best interests, given how Trump handled this the first time, and given the fact that RFK Jr. is more interested in like bear scrotum than containing a pandemic. So I don't know. I mean, I do think there's some pressure to be applied to the people that are supposed to be keeping us safe here.
Mm-hmm. Well, TBD. We'll see what happens. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some more public health stuff, but this is a little bit sillier than a deadly pandemic, possibly.
Hysteria is brought to you by OneSkin. Erin, ever since I started using OneSkin a few years ago, I started getting compliments, specifically on my skin, more than I had before. I've always cared about my skin, but didn't know where to start. Now with OneSkin, I can trust their products that are all rooted in rigorous science and research without feeling like I need a PhD myself. OS1 Face is my favorite. I've recommended it to all of my friends. Now I'm recommending it to you.
OneSkin's results are backed by 4 peer-reviewed clinical studies, over 10,000 five-star reviews, and they've been recognized by Bloomberg as a leader in skin longevity. You really don't need a complicated routine to get healthier, younger-looking skin. I use OneSkin. I feel like, you know, when you're on the younger side of things, you can kind of play loosey-goosey. You can play loosey-goosey with skincare and get by, but eventually it catches up to you. And eventually you get to a certain age where it's much easier to maintain than it is to come back. So OneSkin has been great for me for maintenance. I get compliments on my skin all the time.
Me too.
And every single day that I get a compliment on my skin, I'm like, you know, I gotta take the days as they come. I gotta be grateful for today because who knows how much longer it's gonna last. With OneSkin, I'm hoping at least 3 more weeks.
Perfect.
I feel like my insides are held together with like chewing gum and paper clips, but at least my outsides are looking
good.
You
know, I feel that in my bones.
Born from over a decade of longevity research, OneSkin's OS1 peptide is proven to target the visible signs of aging, helping you unlock your healthiest skin now and as you age. For a limited time, try OneSkin with 15% off using code Hysteria at oneskin.co/hysteria. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code Hysteria. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Hysteria is brought to you by Nutrafol. You know that feeling when your hairline starts filling in? Or when you head out the door and realize that you didn't do that last mirror check to make sure everything's sitting right? Those small moments start to add up, and before you know it, you're feeling like yourself again. Nutrafol supports hair health from within, helping you grow stronger, visibly thicker hair so those that feeling when moments happen more and more often. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF certified for sport, and clinically tested.
It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women tailored to different life stages like postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors such as a plant-based diet so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20% and get added perks like a free Headspace membership to support your hair health journey. Let your hair become one less thing taking up space in your head and see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code HYSTERIA10. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code HYSTERIA10.
You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that's more worried about childcare than the fertility crisis. All right. So the HHS has certainly had its hands full because on top of dealing with or not dealing with the hantavirus outbreak, they have another priority, which is getting babies in all the women, getting babies up in them. The HHS launched moms.gov on Mother's Day, which they announced at the same White House event that we were watching about the hantavirus clips. Can you imagine being at that conference, being like one of the purple wearing ladies standing behind him being like, I thought this was going to be about moms. And then you're talking about like rat poop-itis and Iran. And you just have to stand there and grimace underneath your cross necklace that's glinting on top of your sweater set. I mean, at least they were uncomfortable, right? At least they were
uncomfortable. I mean, at least there's that.
At least there's
he was
that.
Wearing a matching purple tie. I just found that like a sartorial partner in arms, Donald Trump, when he wasn't falling asleep, he was wearing a purple tie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, like other meaningless gestures that the Trump administration has made vaguely in the direction of women. The moms.gov website it's pretty half-assed. It looks like a middle schooler's intro to coding project. It does have some like interesting scrolling things. If you scroll, it like moves a little bit. So
oh, wow.
That's cool.
Animation.
Yeah. The tagline is addressing the needs of mothers and fathers who face difficult or unexpected pregnancies and ensuring the well-being of mothers and the health of American families. Ooh, really rolls off the tongue. You know, when there's several phrases that need to be connected with connecting words, that it's a good tagline. All right. Highlights or lowlights from the site include links to resources for pregnant. Oh, if you're pregnant and you need some resources, great. But if you click on the resources, it just sends you to a Crisis Pregnancy Center database. Now, Crisis Pregnancy Centers, as you know, Alex, are they're medical health centers in only the loosest sense of the word. They are places that provide ultrasounds, often provide misleading information about abortion. They do not allow abortion referrals. A lot of times the ultrasounds are performed by people who are not trained to practice any kind of medicine at all, at any level. And a lot of times they sort of serve as a pipeline to try to convince people to not have abortions, but they are lucrative businesses now because so many states are just like funneling money into these crisis pregnancy centers. But you can also, in addition to being funneled to a crisis pregnancy center, you can also get information on how to start a Trump account for your kid.
Mm. You don't say.
Data mining operation, right? Like there's something fishy
Perfect.
About that. Because it's like money that's available for them when they turn 18. But like, I don't know. I don't trust it. I'm not taking him up on that. There is also—
Just buy some Trump Bitcoin. That's a safer investment.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that's not on moms.gov. Moms got to get with the Trump Bitcoin. Okay, so I looked into the other thing that they're offering on the website, which is a link to order prescription meds from TrumpRx.
Perfect.
I went to TrumpRx because I was like, oh, this is like maybe I have some prescriptions that are cheap on here. But the prices on TrumpRx are— exactly the same as the prices that you can get from GoodRx. Like, exactly the same.
But that doesn't have the word Trump in it.
No,
therefore,
it doesn't.
It forecloses the possibility that Donald Trump is making some money off of
it. But it also doesn't have the word good in it. GoodRx does. GoodRx, you're not giving your health information to whoever built TrumpRx. So I think that maybe slight advantage to GoodRx there, even though the prices are pretty much exactly the same. Some other kind of insidious things going on. A friend of Hysteria, Jessica Valenti, pointed out in her Abortion Everyday newsletter that the Crisis Pregnancy Center database moms.gov specifically promotes is called Option Line, which the pro-life organization Heartbeat International uses to collect massive amounts of data on pregnant women, and data breaches and careless data sharing with corporate employees has been plaguing this entity. The new initiative comes less than a month after Representative Summer Lee pressed RFK Jr. on the Trump administration's attacks on Black maternal health initiatives. Let's watch a clip of that.
Why aren't you putting forth serious policies that actually address the health crises in this country instead of just these unserious conspiracy theories and this wellness influencer mess that we brought up?
Do you want me to answer that question, or are you just talking?
No, it's a question. Again?
You're doing more on maternal health than any other administration.
No, I said Black maternal health.
On maternal health.
That
includes Blacks and whites.
But the thing is that they're actually not the same outcomes, which means that we need specific and intentional interventions for Black maternal health and Black infant.
Can I finish?
Oof. That's a tough watch. Why? He says Blacks? He says Blacks?
Well, that's how he thinks of them.
I mean, ugh.
Okay. As the others.
Yeah. Ugh. Yikes. Okay, Alex, let's start with moms.gov. What do we think of that website? Did you peruse? Did you take a gander?
I did. I was like, did Brett Kavanaugh write this or did Amy Coney Barrett write this? Which one of them? Am I wrong, Aaron? This used to be like life.org. Isn't that like it's a pro-life operation.
It's a pro-life op. Yes, 100%. That's how
that
it started.
They basically renamed the domain and here we are. It is of a piece with the more insidious efforts on the part of the pro-life movement to insert themselves in the decision a woman makes about her body and her reproductive system and guise it as a nonpartisan, non-political, neutral space, which of course it's not. It's there to manipulate and coerce women into making decisions that comport with the right-wing agenda. And that's, it's unfortunate. I am hoping that American, people who are pregnant are a little savvier, given that this moms.gov operation was launched the same week that the Supreme Court is debating whether or not to end abortion access entirely in red states by making mifepristone, which is one of the two drugs used in medication abortion, unavailable through telemedicine. I mean, It's very clear what Trump and his government and the right-wing conservatives he installed in the Supreme Court want to do as it concerns pregnancy and reproduction. And that is take away bodily autonomy, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess it's just if the Trump administration is offering a resource line for pregnant people, you can bet it's not a neutral space.
No, it is not a neutral space. And it has always been their goal to eliminate abortion and make it so that pregnancy was something that is foisted on women, something that is inescapable for women, something that is the only way for women to participate in society and only half participate in society because they're staying home with all the babies that they had. It feels very insultingly disingenuous, and seeing Katie Britt up there and the women that were standing behind him up there just kind of makes my blood boil in a really unique way to see these women that are like okay with the reductive concept that women's main call in life is to create babies. I think it's like I've got two babies. I think it's awesome that I had the babies. I love them. I think like pregnancy is a fucking miracle. It's amazing. Childbirth is a war, and like every mother you've ever seen has like fought in a war. It's like amazing, but it is in no way the only thing that women are supposed to be aspiring to, nor is it something to be aspired to at all. If you're not interested in being a mother, then don't be a mother. Like, I don't understand why it's being. I find it so gross and like insidious, and it makes me very upset to think about it.
I mean, I think it's galling also because they're so encouraging of women to have babies. They put no thought into a social safety net that could hold those women and those babies after they're born. They're totally happy to rip apart any sort of structures that support women or not establish them at all, like paid family leave and healthcare, which they're gutting. I mean, whether it's Social Security and Medicaid, Medicare, like this is an administration that doesn't care about whether people are okay and whether their children are okay, that would rip food out of children's hands and take their medical care away. depending on the employment status of their parents. I mean, it's so utterly disingenuous that it mm-hmm. should not go without mentioning that they don't really care about families because they do everything in their power to dismantle the support structure around the American family. The other piece, I mean, and like also, there is no thought, none whatsoever, to the women who are the collateral damage of these pronatalist policies, down south especially. They're largely poor women, they're women of color, they're people who can't pay to cross lines to go have abortions and make choices that are both personal and economic. They advocate this pronatalist policy without thinking about what it practically means to live that experience in a state where that's the law of the land. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an abomination.
Yeah, it's absolutely an abomination. And another thing about it is it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Ever since Roe v. Wade was overturned, the birth rate in the U.S. has not gone up. In fact, it has gone down. So, you know, people who don't want to have babies are still finding ways to not have babies. And then also, I think that some people who are maybe on the fence, who in a world that was a little bit more welcoming and supportive of mothers and families, would have been like, you know what? I'm pregnant. This wasn't planned. I'm maybe a high-risk person, you know, I'm a little bit worried, but I'm confident that whatever happens, I will be safe and things will be okay for me. And so I'm going to go ahead and have this baby. I think that there are people that are on the fence, like a non-zero number, who are like, I'm pregnant, I'm like, I could be high risk. I live in a state where if something goes wrong, I am really going to live a nightmare. I'm choosing to abort my pregnancy rather than run the risk of having to go through all these things that like other mothers in Texas have had to go through, that mothers all over the South have had to go through, that mothers in Indiana have had to go through. I think that there's the cumulative effect of the policy is punitive for mothers and not beneficial to the birth rate, which is the thing that they're saying they're trying to boost anyway.
Well, I mean, the reality is, I think births in the U.S. have fallen 23% since 2007, and the U.S. is not an anomaly in that. That's happening all over the world. And there's been some super interesting analysis about why that may be. And it's not because we didn't have enough pregnancy crisis center hotline numbers circulating in the ether. It's because, and this is, again, nascent, you know, demographic science, but young people are super uncertain about the future. Mm-hmm. We began talking about the Hanta virus. You're talking about an entire generation of Americans that, you know, had formative years under lockdown who don't know what's coming next. You're talking about incomes. It's not just affordability. It's the elasticity of the income ladder. Like you might be making $40,000 this year, $80,000 the next, and $22,000 the following year. There's no sense of young people don't feel like they can bet on the future. Mm-hmm. There's the climate crisis. There's AI that's eating jobs. I mean, there's a ton of existential angst that has befallen the very young people that should be having babies right now. Mm-hmm. And rather than address that and have a, you know, coherent government policy on any of these things, whether AI or climate or tech or jobs, we have an utterly incoherent snoozer in chief who's just like, go out there, fuck, and have some babies. Mm-hmm. Great. Awesome. Keep it up.
Right. Yeah. Their strategy seems to be like, okay, here's all the reasons that people are not having babies. They're scared because mammals don't reproduce if they're like living in a state of like mm-hmm. extreme stress and fear. So they're stressed and they're scared. They don't want to have babies. That's why. They don't want to. They're stressed and they're scared. And the government's approach to solving this problem is, come on. Come on. Come on. It'll be fine.
Here's a website.
Come on. We're not even going to say it's going to be fine. We're just going to be like, please, come on, please, just have
more
babies.
Well, it's to shame you, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it shaming, though? I feel like that's why they're saying we're under-babied.
Yeah.
Like, it's like you didn't get your Hep B shot. You haven't done your job as a citizen of this country. You have not used your uterus as a house. You better use your uterus as a house.
It's so entitled. I think if I were a young woman who was when I was younger, I wasn't sure if I wanted to have kids or not. I was pretty sure I didn't want to, but I wasn't 100% sure. If I was hearing this language, I don't know if this is just a common human thing or if this is just a like stubborn bitch thing. If I heard my government giving that message, like, come on, you gotta have more babies, you gotta, I would be like, you entitled motherfuckers. No, absolutely not. I would have like dug in more. And I think there's a lot of people probably that hear that sort of language and see the way that a far-right government acts entitled to a woman's time, her body, her mind, her career, everything. And it's like, no. I think that it helps people realize like, oh, no, this is not something that I want to do, especially if I'm being asked to do it. I want to do it freely. or if I'm being cajoled. I don't want to be cajoled. I don't want to be convinced. I don't want motherhood sold to me. I want it to be something I walk into freely and with clear eyes. And I think it's clear that the government is not allowing that. The government wants people to have a fantasy of what it is. The government wants people to feel bullied into doing it. The government wants people to feel like they need to do it because it's a duty and their whole sense of self needs to be put aside in order to accommodate that duty. I think that it's just, I don't necessarily agree that the falling birth rate is a crisis. I actually think that like a gentle landing on the birth rate would probably be better for the planet just overall. We don't want it to precipitously drop because that causes some like economic problems. But like a gentle landing, fine. That's fine. But I also think like I want people to be able to have babies if they want to have babies. And I think they're not taking any steps to make sure that people who want to are not stopped by systemic things stopping them. I don't know. I think, anyway, it's super ineffective message, but there is more Mother's Day messaging from MAGA. We got to talk really quick. RFK Jr. won't shut up about teenage boys' sperm.
Gross.
It's so weird. Why?
Gross. I mean, I think nobody's more interested in the testes than RFK Jr.
Yeah.
He's a testes guy. Every story is a story about him interested in like raccoon testes, bear testes. I may be making up the bear testes thing, but it seems on brand. He's very interested in boy testes, man testes, sperm count. It's a fixation of his, which makes me think, does he have a low sperm count? I'm just asking questions, Aaron.
Yeah.
But virility is such an essential part of the MAGA promise, right? Come here and you'll always be hard. Vote for Donald Trump and you'll never have erectile dysfunction. ED is a thing of the left and they're cuckolded snowflakes.
Okay.
Which is all fucking bullshit.
I'm issuing a challenge. If they're so manly, then they should just make Viagra illegal. Do it.
Totally. And also release their sperm counts. Yeah, I would like to know.
Release the sperm count.
If Donald Trump is one of the most healthy presidents in history, what's a sperm count?
What's
Can
a
we
sperm
know?
Count? I want Are the long swimming? Form. I
Are
want
they
the,
still swimming?
I want the long form sperm count. I don't want any of the short forms. I want
I want to know what the mobility level is of that sperm. If they're getting access via moms.gov to our menstrual calendars, I would like access to their sperm count and sperm motility. Mobility. I would like to know more about what's happening in their plumbing if they're asking us to give the government an accounting of ours.
I wouldn't, but I get. But I follow. I follow. I think that they should understand what it feels like to have their health being invaded by people who are nosy and have no business knowing. But I would.
It takes two to tango, Aaron.
It takes two to tango. I guess I'll do it for the country if I need to read about somebody, some old man's sperm count for the good of America to make a point. Then I'll do it. Weird MAGA messaging around babies and pronatalism. Katie Miller. She's got to have the world's lowest Q score. Do you know anyone who's like,
it's so true.
That Katie Miller, she's so appealing. She's America's sweetheart.
So
she is,
true.
It is. She posted.
So Megyn Kelly has a pretty low Q score.
She does. She does. And she's like, you know what? Maybe if I say another weird thing about men who are adults who have sex with teenage girls, then maybe people will like me more. Or maybe she's just like trying to race it all the way to the bottom. And she could have a podcast called The Lowest Q Score in America.
Low Q.
And low Q. No I, just Q. Low Q. Okay, so Katie Miller posted on Friday, quote, in honor of Mother's Day, a reminder that peak feminism is having babies. What? Words mean things, Katie. Okay, the most radical thing a woman can do is embrace her biological destiny. And then she posted a photo of her pregnant belly, which is like a very, it's like the one angle, like her good angle. Sorry, I'm being mean, but like she's awful, so I can be mean about how she looks. Is having a baby feminist? What does that even mean? What does that statement mean?
This is like the flag. Like they cannot take childbirth and motherhood away from the left. Like fuck this attempt. Like fuck this. No. You do not have to be a fucking fascist sympathizer like Katie Miller to believe that motherhood is a gift and to embrace motherhood. And like I have kids, you have kids. We like children. We like families. We embrace motherhood. But that does not mean that we believe peak feminism is having children or that trad wives are the model of the future. Like, fuck that. And this needs to be nipped right in the bud right quick. Like,
oh, absolutely.
I just feel like, you know, we've seen the right co-opt the notion of patriotism and the flag, and they can't do this to motherhood. Like, I reject this wholeheartedly. Katie Miller does not know. Katie Miller was a shield for her husband during the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Her unborn child, he like ducked behind the unborn child. Is that, I don't know. Like, is that, I guess that's life is sacrosanct, except if you're in a potential shooter event. Like,
I mean, babies repair themselves really easy. They've got really incredible immune
cell duplication. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. I get it. I get it. But I mean, it enrages me. It enrages me, Aaron. And I think this deserves, like, you know, the MAHA movement has been corrupted by RFK Jr. and, or not corrupted, but it's been splintered by RFK Jr., you know, basically helping Trump increase production of glyphosate and Roundup and eat Big Macs and just forego every promise he ever made to that coalition. And I think that the left really needs to stake, you know, plant its own flag in the idea of motherhood and not let them get away with this, because it's bullshit. You do not have to believe that women can't work and can't get college degrees and can't be autonomous individuals and embrace in order to embrace motherhood. Like, that's just, those two things do not, they are not mutually exclusive, or those, right. They are not one thing.
I think anybody that's actually experienced motherhood knows that they're selling a fiction. But the fiction is aimed at people who don't know any better. The fiction is aimed at, like, young people. And the fiction is aimed at, like, people who want to feel as though their decisions to get married young, or, like, their culture and their beliefs around getting married young and having tons of babies are, like, right and justified and should apply to everybody. But I think, like, anybody who's actually provided childcare, or you know, even if it's not to your own child, but if you've been a caregiver to anybody, you know that there's, like, nothing glamorous. I would never describe, like, the times when my kids have been driving me crazy as me being in my feminine. I'm like at my wit's end half the time,
girl.
Because they are like having, I've said this before, but having children is a vocation. Caring for children is a vocation. It's not like this beautiful expression of your gender. It is like an expression of your humanity. Like it is something that some people should do and some people absolutely shouldn't do. But I don't think that, like, encouraging people who aren't 100% like, yes, I want this to be mothers, is going to create a generation of children that are happy and feel loved. Because I think that I really wanted my kids and I love them very much, but I'm like, I can't imagine how fucked up they would be if they knew I resented them every single day.
I know.
You know, like, I know. I chose them. I chose them. I chose this life. And, like, the good stuff and the bad stuff, I chose them. And they can grow up knowing that, because I'm going to be harping about abortion and choice and reproductive justice and how important it is for children to be chosen. Because children are not chosen, are raised by parents who fucking don't like them. And that's not good for kids. So I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm going off on a rant. I have one more MAGA mother comment. Erica Kirk, who can't even live up to the ideals that she preaches, gave a commencement speech at someplace called Hillsdale College.
Mm-hmm.
So let's watch a little clip of that.
Charlie would often encourage people, like Dr. Arne said, to get married young, not rushed, but young. But I just want to encourage all of you, to the men, you are called to provide, you are called to lead, to anchor your families in strength and consistency. To the women, you are called to nurture, to build, to shape lives with wisdom and endurance.
Okay. Okay. What did you? So, I mean, Erica Kirk gave a speech that basically echoed what Harrison Butker gave in his speech. Remember mm-hmm. Harrison Butker's speech a few years back? He was mm-hmm. the kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yep.
And I got to say, like, Erica should be careful, because if what happened to Harrison Butker actually is, you know, prologue, Erica's going to miss a lot of field goals this year. Careful, Erica.
Good luck in January.
Good luck in January. Oh, what did you make of that speech? Like, she couldn't even live up to those principles herself.
Okay, first of all, Hillsdale College is like a right-wing franchise operation that's trying to take over, that's helping rewrite, like, education curricula across the mm-hmm. country, including in Florida. And just, you know, be aware that they're trying to spread their arch-conservative lessons and lesson plans to schools near you, and not just colleges, but also high schools and junior high schools as part of an overhaul of our education system. And they are very powerful within the right-wing flank. So it makes sense that Erica Kirk is delivering this message there. I think, okay, so part of me is galled by that message because I disagree with it. But then it's kind of like, I think the left makes a mistake when it denigrates people who want a traditional marriage, right? Like, if you think that you're put on this earth to support your husband and you want him to be a provider and the man of the house and the person who makes the rules and the sort of God figure, the patriarch, go for that. I don't want that. I don't want that. But you are entitled to believe that. You are entitled to embrace that and believe that your true, you know, self-worth is predicated on your ability to procreate and raise children. I think it's important not to diminish that set of beliefs because it's not like the left is anti-family. And it's not that the left doesn't believe you can be a stay-at-home mom and be a worthy member of society. In fact, I think a lot of women who work, like myself, understand that there are enormous sacrifices that you have to make to be a mom. And oversimplifying either side of it is, I think, really dangerous. What I would love is like a sort of acceptance that those people believe what they believe and a championing of all the complexities and difficulties and rewards that you get when you choose a different life, which doesn't make it better or worse, but that is equally valuable. And I would, you know, I think it's important not to be too dismissive of people who want that traditional family structure because it does exist. They do exist. And that is rewarding for some people. But it's also important to champion a life more complicated and in many cases more rewarding, in my view. But to tread carefully, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah. I think I just find it to be rich that Erica Kirk is out there preaching this message when she didn't get married until she was in her 30s. Like, she had a whole life before she got married. And like, that's fine. There's not, like, good for you, Erica. I guess the thought I want to end this with is that I think as long as people are being honest about what it is and not trying to sell a misrepresentation of what something is. Like, Erica is selling getting married young and having babies young, but she didn't do those things. Like, does she regret her life? No, she's got a life that is enviable to a lot of people, you know? So I think that my issue with the sort of trad wife, like, the thing that people are told await them if they only follow these steps is a life of like comfort and ease and happiness. There is no like guaranteed path to comfort, ease, and happiness. No ideology will save you from the strife and discomfort.
We're all fucked.
Yes, from the strife.
We are all fucked.
We're all fucked. No matter what you believe in, if you're a feminist, an anti-feminist, a hyper right-wing Christian, like you will have to go through the trials and tribulations of life regardless. None of those things will save you from that. And that's an optimistic way to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back. Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. You know how everyone loves dolphins? I love dolphins. Everyone I know loves dolphins, but here's another reason to love our Flippard friends. They've helped unlock a core secret to healthy aging for all. Never seen a wrinkly dolphin.
Never. Smooth as can be.
This joke never gets old. I'm going to say it forever.
They're dewy and firm.
They're dewy and firm. I'm so excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first emerging essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. It is an incredible scientific breakthrough to support our long-term health and wellness, and you guessed it, healthy aging.
Fatty 15 co-founder Dr. Stephanie Van Watson discovered the benefits of C15 while working with the U.S. Navy to continually improve the health and welfare of older dolphins. Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a foundational healthy aging nutrient which helps to slow down aging at the cellular level. In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they can become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. This eventually led to studies finding the first nutritional deficiency to emerge in 75 years called cellular fragility syndrome, caused by a lack of the C15. As many as 1 in 3 people worldwide may have low C15 levels and fragile cells.
70% of Fatty 15 customers report seeing or feeling benefits within 16 weeks, including deeper sleep, calmer moods, better energy, and overall improved health. Now that's essential. We're all aging. which means mm-hmm. that healthy aging starts from birth. Studies have shown that C15 is a foundational nutrient that supports healthy growth and development in children and supports our long-term health as adults. Fatty 15 has 3 times more cellular benefits than EPA, which is an omega-3. By replenishing our cells with the crucial C15 nutrient, Fatty 15 effectively repairs cells, reverses aging-related damage at the cellular level, and restores our long-term health and wellness.
Fatty 15 was developed to support healthy aging for all, from kids to parents to grandparents. That's why award-winning Fatty 15 is now available as Pure Capsules, delicious apple mint gummies for teens and adults, and yummy Berry Blast gummies for kids. Fatty 15 is on a mission to support healthy aging for all, including all ages and stages of life. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout.
Hysteria is brought to you by Babbel. Why do most of us want to learn a new language? It's probably not about memorizing grammar tables or topping a leaderboard. It's because we want to speak it out in the real world with real people. Babbel gets you there fast. Learning a language with Babbel is all about small steps, big wins, and progress you can actually track and feel. Their bite-sized lessons fit easily into your daily routine and are also easy to remember. Just 10 minutes a day is enough to start seeing real results. Babbel recognizes that real-world connections are at the heart of language learning. Their courses are designed by over 200 language experts, real human beings, to teach you relevant words and phrases you'll actually use, so you can start speaking with confidence in as little as 3 weeks.
Babbel lets you practice real-life conversations step-by-step without the stress. You'll build the confidence to speak up when it matters, from ordering a coffee to chatting with new friends abroad. And Babbel is more than just lessons. They even offer a large collection of podcasts where Babbel experts reveal language secrets and offer an inside look at local cultures. So, Erin, we didn't think it was going to happen, but I'm going to make my little trip to Italy. Little trip to Italy.
Wow. Under the Tuscan sun.
Under the Tuscan sun. And you know what is really embarrassing?
Hmm.
Going to Italy with a name like Mastromonaco and only being able to say ciao. So I'm doing a little Babbel, refresh. See if I can be able to learn enough to make it through the markets and with a little dignity intact.
I think Italy is a great place to go if you want to try speaking Italian with your dignity intact, unlike going to France and trying to speak French.
No, that's just mean.
They're just mean to you about it. But
it's like, took French for 15 years, went there on a trip, and they were like, you can just speak English.
However you learn best, by listening, speaking, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Make fast, lasting progress with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, and with 14 languages to choose from, every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/hysteria. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/hysteria, spelled babbel.com/hysteria. Rules and restrictions may apply. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know that Seattle was peak real world. Do you agree, Alex?
Yeah, totally.
Really?
Of course.
Okay, so a lot of people disagree with me on this one.
I mean, honestly, like, my memories from those years are hazy. Like, I spent decades a little too high. So it's just, you know, but yeah, I feel like that was peak real world. All things Seattle to me are coded like peak 90s, which was peak real world.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Before Sean Duffy was an unqualified transit secretary or had a political career at all, he was the competitive lumberjack himbo from Bumblefuck, Wisconsin, cast on The Real World Boston and multiple of its Road Rules spinoffs in the late 90s and early 2000s. And before Rachel Campos Duffy was trying and failing for years to become a panelist on The View, I'm being so mean today, she was bullying her HIV-positive housemate Pedro on The Real World San Francisco. They're a match made in hell, and they've got like a million kids, which is a perfect recipe for reality TV gold, I guess. According to Duffy himself, dozens of reality TV people have wanted to make a show about him for the past 3 decades. But now he's finally returning to his roots with his new show, The Great American Road Trip. The series will follow him, his wife, Rachel, and their 9 children on a road trip across the U.S., which he touts as a civic experience. He released the trailer this week on the Department of Transportation YouTube channel. Let's take a look.
What a beautiful family.
I just kissed the head of Mr. President, kissed the head of President Trump. taking a little trip.
Yes, yes.
A little trip all over.
So the motto is, to love America is to see America.
It's more than a road trip. It's a civic experience. It's one of the most powerful ways to understand the vast, beautiful, complicated place we call home.
One, two, three, road trip!
Everybody looks forward to it?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not told to go by your parents. You're not said, we're going and you're going, but I don't want to go, Mom.
Seatbelts on.
Everybody wants to go, right?
I think Mud's kind of mad.
I'm not.
You're mad!
We're not going to fight on this trip. Put your seatbelts on.
So we're inviting you along with our family on the Great American Road Trip. Stop scrolling and hit the road, mile by mile, window down, and hearts wide open.
Welcome to Montana.
The Duffys, they've got tons of kids. I think they have like 11 kids.
Nine
or 11 something. Is there a difference?
We're encouraging everyone to go take a road trip to celebrate America's 250th birthday.
My God.
Okay, so what's wrong with this picture, Alex? Let's go through it. Did the Secretary of Transportation just spend the last 7 months fucking off and using government money to fund an 11-person family vacation? No. Duffy insists that this project did not use taxpayer dollars, but that just opens things up to other nefarious sources of funding. Apparently, production costs were covered by a nonprofit called the Great American Road Trip Incorporated, whose website lists sponsors including Toyota. I guess I could have guessed that from that tight shot on the Toyota logo during the preview. Boeing, Shell, and United Airlines. That's right. Duffy's vanity project appears to be funded by the very industries he is overseeing. Watchdog groups have called out Duffy for violating federal gift and travel rules. Well, Duffy claims that this is career ethics and budget officials at the Department of Transportation, aka he's kind of blaming the deep state. So if he's not doing it on taxpayers' dime, was the Secretary of Transportation just like working a second job for the last 7 months when he was supposed to be doing his job? Like, is that what was happening? Alex, what do you make of this? What do you make of this show?
Did he rent some $20,000 horses? Like, what the fuck? These cabinet secretaries have all been out in the field with very expensive film crews shooting vanity projects. Like, please, someone in Congress drag Sean Duffy up to the Hill and ask him who paid for this and how this was actually in his portfolio of responsibilities as the transportation secretary. I will just say it is like the most tone deaf thing. It's hard to say that I've seen from this administration because everything's so tone deaf. But like, this is happening when gas is like $600 a gallon and just going up. Yeah. Like, this is happening when Americans are working to make ends meet and he's just maxing and relaxing with his 15 kids for 7 months and not doing his job. I mean, and it underscores the reason any of these people are in public service is for personal gain. They just want to be famous. Like you said at the beginning, they want to be reality TV stars either for the first time or again. It's just about fame and power and notoriety. It's not at all about the American public or even doing the job that they were confirmed to do. It's like a shocking, it's shocking that they did this and then they released it now thinking it would be a good idea.
It's crazy to me that somebody didn't watch this and say like, you know what? Do we want people every 3 to 4 hours on their family vacation to be reminded of how expensive gas is? Do we want that, like, on a rolling regular, we're like, take a road trip for the 250th birthday of America. And on that road trip, every, you know, like very regularly, you will have to sit there and watch number go up, way too up, and be like, oh shit, we're at war in Iran. This is something that was completely our own fault. We caused the problem. The problem still exists. And now I'm spending an arm and a leg celebrating America's birthday. But what am I doing? Like, it just feels like a great way to get people to really think hard about all the ways the Trump administration has fucked up. And I'm surprised there wasn't like some QC that was like, hey guys, we got to take the bit out about taking a road trip for the 250th.
Not a great time for a road trip.
No.
Unless you have an electric vehicle.
Unless you have an electric vehicle.
I mean, which I'm sure they're not in, right? Because that would be a hat tip to the libs. No, no.
Yeah.
They were doing this road trip and filming it back when gas was $3.25 a gallon. And now look where it is.
And apparently the filming took place over the course of 7 months, allegedly around his kids' weekend and school break schedules. So it's like a deceptive road trip. Oh, did they even drive everywhere?
United Airlines is involved. They probably flew and then drove and then flew home. I mean, that's the only way you do a weekend road trip.
Okay. I'm just going to say this. I'm a bit of a road trip snob. I love taking a road trip. and I hate flying to the point that my husband and my entire family, including our dog, got in my car and drove all the way from Los Angeles to like Minneapolis, the Minneapolis area, wow, for Christmas this year because I didn't want to fly that bad. So we drove. And I like a road trip. I even like the parts where there's nothing happening, like driving through random small towns in Nebraska. I'm not going to complain about that. I love that shit. I absolutely love it. If you're flying somewhere and renting a car, it is not a road trip.
That's called a rent car rental.
You rented a car. You took a mini road trip.
You rented a car.
You took a mini road trip.
It's a Great American Car Rental is what it is. It should be sponsored by Hertz.
Wait, is Hertz a sponsor?
We should. Well, we'll find out.
Enterprise is a sponsor?
Perfect. Yes. Okay, perfect.
Okay. We cracked the code, Alex.
We did. It's an Enterprise ad.
It's okay. But let's not let Sean Duffy have all the fun. Did you know that Meatball Ron DeSantis has his own reality series, too? It has been going on for a really, really, really long time, apparently. It's called Diners, Drive-Ins, and DeSantis, and in it, he awkwardly promotes local Florida restaurants. Let's watch a clip.
And then I'm going to let you do the honors. And you just cover it all with that?
We do. There's a little trick to it, but you want to whip this up a little bit.
All right. Go ahead and put that right on there.
Yeah.
All right. Man, my kids would love this.
Plop it right
you
on there.
Spread it out like that?
Yeah. Put some more on there.
Okay.
And just plop it. There you go.
Man. Yeah.
Couple more.
Wow. All right.
Okay. Look at that. Oh, wow.
That's pretty good. Maybe a little bit more here.
I'm impressed.
There we go. That is a lot of fresh strawberries, yes, too. I mean, man. And that's yeah, really impressive.
Oh, my God.
He's got all the charm of J.D. Vance in a donut shop.
I was going to say.
So awkward.
I was going to say if Anthony Bourdain were still alive, he would get in his car, drive there, and beat the shit out of Ron DeSantis.
Oh, my God.
I think that there's a couple things that I thought. One of them is disgusting, and I'm apologizing in advance. The fact that he's sitting there slathering cream on a pie makes me think that out there somewhere, there's a very bad Google result for Florida Governor Cream Pie.
Oh,
Sorry. Secondly, I feel like putting cream on a pie and eating a corn dog are two things you don't want to do on camera as true, a politician.
It's true. Hot dog, corn dog. I will say also, Ron, putting hands DeSantis should stay away from kind of viscous dessert foods at all costs, right?
Yeah.
Like this is the guy who apparently ate pudding with his hands. Don't go near whipped cream.
No.
I will say, Aaron, I watched a little bit of this. I watched a pizza episode. And like Ron DeSantis is one of the least charismatic politicians I have ever seen on
That's
camera.
That's like the one thing you have to be as a politician.
He's got his observation about the food, like that's a lot of strawberries. In the pizza episode, he keeps talking about the char on the crust and the fact that the pizza isn't droopy over and over again. He's got literally nothing in the tank for this. It actually makes me think less of Ron DeSantis.
Wow.
In the end. And that's hard because I don't even think he's wearing – I think he might be wearing the lifts in this, but I don't know.
Uh-huh. You know, it really highlights how talented Guy Fieri is. Like, mm-hmm, you gotta hand it to him. Like, everybody who successfully has a show where they go around eating various foods, you have to have some riz to pull it off. And, like, Ron DeSantis does not have riz. It's so funny that he would choose to do this out of all the things.
I think it's just because they're trying to soften up his image and make him somewhat likable. But it's a lipstick on a pig situation. I will just say, Aaron, as someone who used to shoot a documentary show on the road where we ate the circus on Showtime, mm-hmm, eating in front of the camera is very fraught. You need to know what the fuck you're doing in addition to having something to say about the food itself.
Uh-huh.
Ron DeSantis ain't got none of it.
Do you have any tips for Ron about how to eat on camera?
Don't. I mean, basically what you do is you push your food, you eat before so you know what it tastes like, and then you kind of just take nibbles. But he's actually trying to eat. Like at one point, you can tell he really wants to eat the pepperoni pizza, so he can't even get out any wry observations because he just wants to stuff the slice in his mouth. Don't go in hungry because then you just look like a slob and then you're preoccupied with the food. You got to eat before, uh-huh, and then use it as kind of a victory lap to talk about the food but not actually consume it. That would be my pro tip, but I do not think he's going to take it.
No. Listen, Ron DeSantis, if you're listening, we've got some tips for you. Okay,
Meatball?
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty.
Hysteria is brought to you by 3-Day Blinds. Why waste a Saturday wandering around a blind store when 3-Day Blinds brings the showroom to you? Spend your Saturday brunching, not blind shopping.
I'm imagining wandering around a blind store and I'm getting the feeling that I got when we did an addition to our house when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And every goddamn weekend we were at a giant
that was
like,
us.
Store.
Same.
And
same.
It was like my mom was looking at paint and light fixtures.
Wallpaper and grout.
And it was just like, oh, the most boring place in the world for a kid. And imagine if it was just blinds.
That would be pretty boring.
I don't want to go there.
You don't want to do that to your kids.
No, there's a better way to buy blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery, and it's called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of high-quality custom window treatments in the U.S. And right now, if you use my URL, 3dayblinds.com/hysteria with the number 3 first, they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal.
We can shop for almost anything at home. Why not shop for blinds at home, too? 3-Day Blinds has local, professionally trained design consultants who have an average of 10-plus years of experience and provide expert guidance on the right blinds for you in the comfort of your home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no-obligation quote the same day. Not very handy? DIY projects can be fun, but measuring and installing blinds can be a big challenge. The expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros.
I was checking out 3-Day Blinds Instagram, and they've got some good-looking blinds. I think the bamboo shades might be my favorite.
I love bamboo.
Oh, yeah. Bamboo's great, except not to plant. Don't plant
it. Don't do that. Invasive. Very bad.
Don't do it. With 3-Day Blinds, you choose from thousands of options that fit any budget or style, plus from light filtering and blackout blinds to motorization and smart blinds that work with Alexa. 3-Day Blinds is a real upgrade to your home, not just a replacement. Right now, get quality window treatments that fit your budget with 3-Day Blinds. Head to 3dayblinds.com/hysteria for their buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/hysteria. One last time, that's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to the number 3daiblinds.com/hysteria.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who would love to see the 10-year-old kid's mom fight Representative Virginia Fox. Okay. For those of you who haven't caught up on the news, ancient North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox is getting another round of bad headlines over yet another unforced error where she behaved like a nursing home resident who the nurses won't give a knife out to in fear that she'll stab them. Let's take a look at the Fox News broadcast on the incident. Let's watch the clip.
2038 is only 12 years away, and you and your classmates will be responsible for the debt.
A message from Republican North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox that was sent to 10-year-old Christian Mango. Christian says certain words she said.
I could understand like half of it, not all of it.
His mother, Emily Mango, says the reply from Fox was in regards to an assignment from Christian's teacher at Canterbury School in Greensboro.
Christian and his class, they're in fourth grade, they wrote a persuasive essay of their choosing, and they mailed it off to a representative, a CEO, whoever the decision maker was that could be influential in hearing their persuasive essay points.
Christian says the topic he chose.
We should have a $5,000 tax rebate for electric cars because they're better than normal cars. They're better for the environment. You pay less and there's no gas.
Christian says in April he mailed the essay to Fox in a Canterbury school envelope with fourth grade on the return address. A few weeks later, the school received this letter from Representative Fox via email. While the congresswoman thanked the 10-year-old for contacting her, she disagreed with his proposal. Fox cited six articles from news organizations such as Fox News and Wall Street Journal. But towards the end of her response, she attacked Christian's teacher.
Ask your teacher to explain propaganda to you. But I will never be able to know. My guess is that your teacher will not be able to give you a good educational experience by helping you to build a sink as they are too interested in indoctrinating you. How sad.
All right. So, Virginia Fox, Alex, what are your thoughts? You've got two kids, two little guys.
Well, let me just say, Aaron, it takes a special kind of crotchety ass old person to write something like that to a child. Like, you really have to be shotgun on the front porch level, insane and bitchy to do that to a fourth grader. Now, my children love writing anti-Trump screeds just on their own accord. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly trying to advocate a more measured approach to those who think differently than us, but they're very engaged in the world. Having said that, you know, we lead by example. She is a lawmaker. And the idea that you're going to launch a sort of accusatory screed at the child and his teacher, just, I mean, that's not what adults do, to say nothing of the fact that's not what lawmakers do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, if you needed any more confirmation that MAGA is a bunch of angry ass people that look upon the world and see things to hate, this is like the best proof there is.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to looking like a pile of dead skin cells and talcum powder, Virginia Fox, just doing a mini this fucking guy on her. She supports removing birthright citizenship. She voted against giving aid to Hurricane Katrina victims. But then, of course, when the state of North Carolina needed aid after Hurricane Helene, she was all for the federal government opening its coffers. And she also claimed that the death of Matthew Shepard was a hoax in an op-ed. And she has dodged the metal detectors outside of the house floor. This is cool. Grandma behavior. Like the doddering old lady she is, when Hurricane Helene washed out a road she and her husband owned, she refused to let her neighbors access the only way off the mountain because the route would take them through her property.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, yeah, right? This is a real community-oriented person. Thank God she's a representative legislator.
Yeah.
Cool.
She's also a hag. I'm saying it's a gendered insult, but you know what?
Sometimes if the shoe fits.
Before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. Alex, take it away.
Yeah, well, it has been incredibly, it's been a thrill guest hosting Hysteria this week. And if you want to hear more from me, I can't imagine you would. But if you do, please check out my podcast on Crooked, Runaway Country, this week. This week, we're diving deep into redistricting and what it means for Democrats and what they should do in the aftermath of both the Supreme Court's VRA shredding and also the Virginia State Supreme Court's invalidation of voter-approved maps that would give Democrats possibly as many as four seats in the Old Dominion. So I talked to Representative Suhas Subramaniam about the fight to preserve the gains that Democrats were making in Virginia. And I sat down with Mike Giardis from New York to talk about what Democrats in blue states might do ahead of 2028. And I talked to the great Stacey Abrams about how we should think of this moment, what sacrifices Democrats should and shouldn't make when it comes to gaining seats, and why all of this matters for our representational democracy. It's a super good episode. Lots of nerdy, interesting material in there. You can listen to Runaway Country every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts, or you can, of course, watch on YouTube, where you should please subscribe. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Now let's get to Sandy Petty.
Yay! Okay, I've been growing a lot of tomatoes. One of the ways that my fear about the state of the world has manifested is through prepping, and gardening to me is a form of prepping. I've also been reading a lot about like forthcoming tomato shortages, and I'm getting a little freaked out. So I've been growing like a lot more tomatoes than normal this year. But I've been noticing that the names of tomato varieties are like very strange. Like, you know how roses are called, like, this is the Betty White and this is the Faye Dunaway, and they're named like, this is Maiden's Fair Morning. And tomato names are just not, we need better tomato names. I'm feeling petty.
I agree.
I'm feeling petty about it. So I'm going to read
some. What do you got?
I'm going to read some
petty.
What do you
got?
Big Beef. Big Beef is the name of one kind.
That sounds very RFK.
Black Crim, K-R-I-M.
What is that?
Black Crim. I mean, when you read it, it looks like it could be a headline on like the Russian version of Breitbart, K-R-I-M. Uh-huh. But it is like, yeah, it's like a dark a dark tomato variety that originated in Crimea. But it's now popular in the U.S.
But that would be Crimea with a K?
It's spelled K-R-I. I don't know. I don't. They need better names, Alex. Okay. Early girl. German Johnson.
Moms.gov.
Yeah.
Sorry.
German, early girl is the new, yeah, the new moms.gov. German Johnson. Matt's Wild Cherry.
Ooh.
Matt, you don't need to involve your name. Your name's
Sounds
Matt.
Sounds like a Matt Gaetz plot, yeah. Subplot.
Micro Tom.
That's
a Megyn Kelly insult. Mortgage Lifter.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Stripey.
I actually like Mr. Stripey.
I like Mr. Stripey, too.
I go for Mr. Stripey.
Mr. That's, Stripey's cool. It's like a green one that has like little stripes, and they named it Mr. I think someone's kid, like a herbologist kid or whatever, probably named it Mr. Stripey.
I think Mr. Stripey is good. Sounds like one of the Mr. Mister books, like Mr. Nosy, Mr. Rude.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Stripey.
Mr.
Only
Stripey.
Only he's a tomato.
So, yeah, we just need better names for tomato types. I'm currently growing some Cherokee Purple, some Early Girl, Black Crim. And something that's called like Burpee's Big Beef, which I don't like.
In celebration of RFK.
Yeah.
Will you take photos of these tomatoes and offer them up somewhere on the internet?
Oh, for sure. Once they're big, they're little babies seasoned? Right now. They're little babies. They're still green. So like they're not going to be ready.
Well, LA growing season. So much better than the East Coast growing season.
I know.
Respect.
I know.
I'm thrilled for you. I'm thrilled for the tomatoes, if not the names.
Thank you. But knock wood, it doesn't get so hot that they all die. Because that's what happened a couple years ago. We had like 2 weeks of 100 degree weather in June. And they all were like, bye. I'm going.
Well, and that's where we differ.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Alex. What are you feeling sane or petty about this week?
It's like right in the middle, actually, of sane and petty, but Trump naps. Have you noticed how extraordinary they've gotten? Mm-hmm. Like, initially, it was just a closing of the eyes for some time. But at that moms.gov event, if you go look at the videotape, Trump is just, first of all, I feel tired when when I see someone who cannot stay awake, it makes me feel drowsy. And some part of me, I never say this, feels some sympathy for Donald Trump because he's trying so hard. And he's doing that thing where he's kind of in and out of consciousness where he'll pipe up and say kind of a non sequitur just to confirm that he's still verbal to the audience.
But hamburgers,
they are.
Hamburgers.
Right, exactly. Testosterone. They loser. First of all, they are evidence that this person is in significant decline. They should be talked about a lot more. I mean, if Joe Biden, who tripped like four times and it became a national health emergency, faced what he faced. And look, I think some of it was very, rightful criticism. Mm-hmm. But we should be talking a lot more about Trump's fitness for office. The dude cannot stay awake at 11 a.m. Like with Biden, at least you got to like 3 p.m. and he couldn't do events after 4 or 5. Trump can't do any events. He's falling asleep all the time. The only time he's actually awake is when he sends out like 200 Truth Social posts at between 11 and 12 o'clock because much like a house cat, he's been sleeping the rest of the day.
He's got the zoomies.
He's got the zoomies. Like that's his version of the zoomies. We should be talking about Trump naps. We should be feeling empathy for a doddering old psychopath who can't keep his eyes open. And we should be talking about, 25th Amendment. Just saying.
Yeah.
Putting it out there.
Yeah, it is. It's very concerning. It's very concerning at this juncture. Okay, I have to make a quick announcement before we go. So I've been wrong about things in the past. I was wrong about opossums. I thought they were gross. And I got some strongly worded emails from people who study opossums who are like, they are amazing animals. They eat ticks. They help the urban environment. They're sweet. They just like suffer from being kind of like a little on the ugly side. And I read about opossums and I'm like, you know what? I love a possum. If I see one in my yard, I'm like, great. I'm glad you're here, sweetheart. Take all the time you need. I'm not mad at you. I'm going to have to issue a new statement on Blippi, the children's entertainer. And here's why. A couple months back, I commented under a Ms. Rachel post about how I wasn't seeing a certain male children's entertainer perform activism or be outspoken about children the way that Ms. Rachel was, and that male entertainer was banned in my house, which is true. I didn't mention Blippi's name, but the real Blippi responded to my comment and said, I signed on to the petition. And I was like, I didn't even say Blippi. How did you know I was talking about Blippi? Apparently, I have shit-talked Blippi on this show before.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because I don't let my kids watch Blippi because I found Blippi to be obnoxious. That's why we don't watch Cocomelon. It's not because I think Cocomelon's evil. Anyway, I mentioned Blippi on a recent podcast again, and we got an email. Subject line, Blippi loves you, Aaron. Email, Aaron, Alyssa, and team. It was so great to hear your conversation about Ms. Rachel's activism in defending the humanity and dignity of all children. It's been so surreal to watch the work of children's entertainers become more and more politicized by the minute as the right continue their attacks on families who don't look like theirs. I play Blippi in the National Touring Stage Musical, and while I'm very sorry to hear you hate Blippi, just know that the folks behind Blippi love you and all of Crooked's work. We're so proud of our friend Ms. Rachel and can assure you that even if you don't like our particular show, we promise we're doing all we can at meet and greets and out in the world to make every child feel welcome and seen. Thank you for engaging in media for young families. The Be Like Blippi tour will be in LA on Monday, April 27th, if you or anyone in the Crooked family would like to come see us. Keep fighting the good fight, Patrick, Blippi, and Mika. So I'm going to have to go ahead and rescind my mean Blippi comments.
You sure do.
I still don't want to watch it, but I think the Blippi people are good.
Wow. That's a mea culpa. And that's what we need more of in this country is people saying, I got it wrong and I'm sorry.
I got it wrong and I'm sorry. Alex Wagner, thank you so much for joining me this week. This was a delight.
Buddy, you're the best.
Come
Thanks
back
for
anytime.
Having me on.
Honestly, come back anytime. We can have like a group hang with me, you, and Alyssa. It'll be super fun. Yeah. All right, listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com is the email address, and we will have more hysteria for you next week. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, Alyssa Mastromonaco, and me, Erin Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.